This is session 8 of the PDH online course, Modern Closed Circuit Television Design. In this session, we'll speak for a while about obvious and subtle design errors associated with closed circuit television design. We'll review some of the materials not included in the audio version, including the related web links. We'll identify the manufacturers and sources involved, even though we won't give you the full URL to click on in order to go through them immediately. There is also a quiz in the written version, available from the written version, which is not part of the audio version. The most critical elements in producing a quality CCTV image are camera location, lens selection, and lighting. These three components deserve almost as much attention as the rest of the design put together. It's well worth the time to do a site visit with a sample CCTV camera with a varifocal lens and a laptop computer that accepts video input. Record screenshots, use Alt Print Screen, and drop it into Microsoft Word using Control C, the paste command. Make sure the designer and the client are satisfied with the image. This tells you where the camera goes. This tells you what lens to use on it. It tells you if you've got adequate lighting. Camera location can be changed by relocating the mounting bracket and using a different style of bracket. A 10-foot pendant mount that is hanging down from the ceiling, 10 feet below the ceiling, is uglier than all get-out, or as it says in the coursework, aesthetic drawbacks, but may be the only way to get an acceptable image. And these are done. I've seen cathedrals, modern Baptist cathedrals, with the 10-foot pendants and a little camera hanging from it. And also you do similar things like that for choir microphones to get good sound into the TV and the recording system. Lens selection is covered in detail in this course, and go back to that if it didn't make sense. Maybe it'll make more sense now that it's settled down a little bit. A 5mm to 50mm varifocal lens covers standard lenses and moderate telephoto lenses. A 5 to 50 is just a real nice device. It solves a lot of problems. A 3 to 8 covers almost all of the wide angle problems. 5 to 50 covers almost all intermediate. And a 7 to 70 isn't real expensive, and it gets to a real long telephoto when you go all the way to the 70mm. There are 125mm fixed CCTV lenses available. They're not terribly expensive, 100 quarter, 100 and a half, something like that. And again, from using the table, you can see what a 125mm lens will do for you. You will have problems with the wind blowing, shifting the camera a little bit, and the image shaking. But you will get an image of what it is you want to look at, and using the recording software, you can record what's going on at those locations. Lighting is a terrible problem, and I want to share this with you because from the designer viewpoint, it's not a problem. It's pretty easy to put light on the stage, to put light on the presenter, to put light on the person walking through the door. What's wrong with it is the person walking through the door doesn't like a bright light in his eyes. Now, what do we do to get light there without having people screaming about the lights in their eyes? Well, what you do is use not-so-bright lights and use them on the sides. Now, again, ideally, the best light would be at the same location as the camera. The light shoots down, reflects off the person, reflected light goes in the camera, job done. The secondary choice is to put two lights far to the right and far to the left, pointing on the doorway you might be interested in. This will illuminate it well. You get a good picture on the camera, and the person may complain about the light far to his right and far to his left, but he's walking forward, and it's not blinding him to find the doorknob to get in or anything like that. There is a separate PD course on theatrical lighting. And again, this thing about entering the door, that you can understand what we're talking about. Exactly the same thing applies when you have a presenter at a podium trying to explain things to the audience. He does not want a bright light in his face so that he can't see the audience. He will tolerate bright lights from both sides so he can still look forward and see the audience. A compromise is two bright spotlights at the far left and far right of the space, again providing excellent lighting of the presenter and excellent images, but not in the same line of sight as the audience. Two lights in locations not under control of the TV person have a low likelihood of remaining on and aimed correctly. Now, this is reflecting back to the theatrical situation where these are on floor stands. People are walking by them, and just somebody has to reach out and touch it, try to burn his hand, try to change the illumination. If we're talking about a story door, these can be little floodlights that are attached to the ceiling. Nobody's going to get up there and mess with them. They will burn out, but you'll know immediately from your image that you lost all the lighting on one side of it. Subtle design errors include inadequate specification of cable installation. The National Electric Code is clear on proper installation. This is covered with examples in the course. Local inspectors are becoming sensitive to the fire hazard of loose cables blocking access to the above ceiling space and contributing to toxic smoke levels. It's a major hardship for the contractor to repull all cables as a result of the final electrical inspection. Now, he may try to get the owner to pay for this, but it's his mistake. We should have warned him early on to follow the rules and put the right stuff in the right place. A very subtle hazard is unsatisfactory interactions of video electronics provided by different manufacturers. A video consultant will take responsibility for compatibility. Usually he handles this by specifying only one manufacturer. A lighting designer who is covering for video needs on a job may see substantial savings from selecting components from different manufacturers. The savings are real. The potential for incompatibility is also real. This is because digital handling of analog signals makes certain assumptions about the analog signals. Another digital component may have modified those signal characteristics. See the discussion of down the coax control of pan-tilt zoom cameras. Be careful with counts and maximum cable length. Common input counts for sequential switches, quad multiplexers, and digital video recorders are 4 cameras, 8 cameras, and 16 cameras. If you've got a 17th camera, you've got a problem. And it's very easy towards the end of the project for somebody to realize an oversight was made and there is an essential location that must be recorded. And you've got all your switchers and your DVRs full. What are you going to do? Well, avoid this by thinking in terms of contingency. Plan how you're going to handle it if it comes up, because a very, very high likelihood of it coming up. A quad multiplexer upstream will combine 4 of the cameras into a single video stream, and it's handled as a single video stream all the way down into the DVR. That frees up 3 camera locations for other purposes, for extra cameras you've come up with. The quad is a bit of a compromise, but you've still got all of the functionality you've started with. You lose a little bit on resolution, a little bit on ease of viewing, but it's still all there. We call that a workaround. A commonly used set of maximum lengths for video cables goes like this. RG59, the one we talked about in the course, 750 feet, an outside diameter of 0.25 inches. RG6 is a slightly different coaxial cable, but it has a maximum length of 1,500 feet, and it has an outside diameter of 0.28 inches. RG11 is available, again, costs a little bit more, but it has a maximum length in standard video signals of 1,800 feet, the outside diameter of 0.4 inches. So when somebody says, you're getting too far away for coax, well, they're talking correctly for RG59, so you have to spend a little more money and go to RG6 or RG11. Or go to the twisted pair and the ballon that we talked about in the course. Those are rated for 1,000 feet. It would be interesting to see how the resolution drops off above 1,000 feet. Once again, we're using high-quality local area network cable, this Category 6 local area network cable. If you've ever looked at the way it's put together, it's an extremely tight twist of the signal conductors. That means low losses, low interference components, just a real nice product, and they're buying hundreds of millions of linear feet of this stuff for local area networks, so you can buy as much as you want at a very competitive price for use on your closed-circuit TV network. There are also limits on the power cable length for the camera. The variables are the camera load in amperes. Unfortunately, they always rate the cameras in volt amperes. The tolerable voltage drop and the power wire size. Cameras work well on number 22 AWG within 20 feet of the power supply. What is number 22 AWG? That's the stuff in the local area network cable. It's also called telephone wire. It's almost as thin as a strand of hair. Little tiny stuff. 20 feet, no problem. Number 18 is the standard Siamese cable power conductor that we talked about earlier. Number 18 is like zip cord. It's real power cable, and it's good for, let's say 1,000 feet. There is a table, and I don't have the table in front of me right now, but these numbers grow very, very rapidly. Number 18 will cover any of the RG-59, RG-6, RG-11 we talked about previously. If you get into a funny camera that has large power requirements, the Pelco advertisements I was looking at was a 10VA camera that draws 1/10 of an ampere at 12 volts DC. That's the one we talked about before that'll work from 8 volts to 40 volts. Well, on that particular camera, you've got over 1,000 feet on number 18 Siamese power on the coax. If you've got a 20VA camera, suddenly the distance drops to half that because you're doubling the amount of voltage drop by doubling the amount of current. The current creates the voltage drop, so more current means more voltage drop. And the one that really, really hurts is if somebody convinces you to put an enclosure heater on the camera power circuit, because that draws a lot of current compared to the camera, drops the voltage drastically. If you get forced into a situation like that, handle the enclosure heater separately from the camera. I don't want to design this for you. You must look at the situation, make your own decision. I would try real hard to run the camera heater off a local receptacle. That's a non-reliable power source, but who cares? If it drops out, that means that the auto iris quits working eventually, not immediately. On the other hand, if you lose the camera, you've got nothing. You're completely dead. So get the camera power off the good UPS down the Siamese cable. Maybe get the enclosure heater off a local 120-volt receptacle. Final concern is vandalism. Unfortunately, there are destructive persons around. Cameras are perceived as intrusive and often unwelcome. A mini-dome camera with concealed wiring will survive most attacks. An exposed box camera mounted less than 10 feet above finished floor level will almost certainly be re-aimed, the lens removed, or it will disappear entirely. Now, a topic I overlooked in this course, and I'd like to mention at this point because it fits in so very well, is the use of armored cable. The reason it's overlooked is the installers don't like to do it. It's hard to do it. It's kind of a bother, and they get no advantage out of it, but the user gets a tremendous advantage out of it. As it said in the course just a few sentences ago, you want to conceal the wiring. It's real nice with a mini dome camera. The wire punches through, you hold the camera in your hand, and then you hook up the wires to it. Then you mount the camera over the hole where the wire came through. There's nothing to show how that thing is connected. It's just up there, and people who know what's going on know it's a camera. There's nothing to grab a hold of and pull. On the other hand, if you've got a piece of telephone wire and a piece of coax, which is what almost all of the installers do as the quickest, easiest way, it's a real challenge for people on the basketball team to jump up and try and grab that so they can jerk it out. Well, the third alternative is to use armored cable, where they can jump up, grab a hold of it, and swing from it back and forth, and it doesn't come out. The armored cable we're talking about is the same stuff used for handsets on payphones. That stuff is commercially available. You can use it to hook up closed-circuit TV cameras. It will survive. It's expensive, but again, we're only buying 2 or 3 feet of it. So what are we talking, $10 if it's real expensive? It's not the cost of it. It's the difficulty in stocking the thing. It's the difficulty in terminating it, putting the proper strain reliefs on it so that your basketball star can swing from it without it coming loose. The course summary: closed-circuit television design is simple and forgiving. It's a nice place to start out because even if you make a mistake, you get to test it out before you turn it over to the owner, and you get to make corrections before you turn it over to the owner, and you give him a first-class system covering up any mistakes along the way without spending a huge amount of money. Analog signals with coaxial cables may be utilized, but analog signals over twisted pair is fully viable, including power and possibly using existing local area network infrastructure. Digital signals, IPTV, exclusively over a local area network, is recommended for all but the most simple door-answering applications. Inexpensive, very sophisticated video control hardware and software are available. The information not included in the audio section are the URLs, the links to jump to view literature and catalog pages on the materials discussed here. I will mention the names of the manufacturers because I think these are names you should know. They are names that your supplier should be mentioning when he's telling you about the system he recommends. The premium CCTV supplier, no question, Pelco. Broad range of CCTV products, Polaris USA. Place that sells the $50 throwaway mini dome camera, and they're out there and we're buying them for the current project, place called Easy Security Depot. A low-cost outdoor CCTV dome camera, Essentia, and I talked to them, they're down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Extremely low-cost indoor TV domes, BaylorNet. Low-cost CCTV accessories, CCTV Video, one word, that's cctvvideo.com. $169 color, 9 to 22 varifocal dome, $169. Discount securitycameras.net, discount-security-cameras.net. They have a real interesting online catalog. $349 color, 0.06 lux, 5 to 50 millimeter weatherproof license plate camera. That comes from a place called EagleVision1.com. RG59 plus an 18-2 making up a Siamese for $185. Place called Sonerik.com, S-O-N-E-R-I-K. Belden Siamese. The part number for the Belden Siamese is 549945. That's the one you want or somebody else's equivalent. I think this is a typo where I say you get the Belden information from Axis.com. Axis.com would be the Axis cameras. West Penn, their Siamese is called 2815B, and you would look at the picture of that at westpenn-cdt.com. A 5 to 50 millimeter manual Iris F1 4 varifocal lens for $89, place called Spy Town. $94 8-channel sequential switch, pelicancam.com. Again, they have a real interesting online catalog. Just it's worth 15 minutes to read their catalog. pelicancam.com. $785 6-channel TCP/IP camera server and a $295 IPTV DVR. Place called Stardot. Stardot is a subsidiary of Thomas Computer. And if you do a web search for Stardot or Thomas Computer, it'll come back. If you go directly to the thomascomputer.com, it's a little hard to find their Stardot products. But if you go to the price list, they're listed in order and you can get to the specifications that way. Panasonic monitors. Security Ideas has a very nice catalog of Panasonic monitors. Panasonic has their own website, but you don't get to see the prices. And that's a big part of the fun, is seeing how much more the extra features cost if you can afford the really first-class monitor. The premier TV IPTV supplier is Axis.com. Fiber optic converters. And again, this is a place that is just a treasure trove of information for electronics people. Blackbox.com. And there's a section on fiber optic converters that is shown in the link in the written version. But Blackbox.com sells really, really fantastic converters of kinds you haven't imagined. It's a wonderful place to spend a few minutes looking around. $30 Baylon adapter from coax and power to RJ45. Cyberguys.com. And that concludes the list of links. We would go into the quiz for the course if we were in the written version. In the oral version, I ask you to contact PDH Online to get the quiz, and they will give you a chance at the end of the quiz to write comments to the instructor. And I would appreciate hearing from you what you thought was done well, what you thought could be improved, and if you have some suggestions for improvement, it would be very much appreciated. Thank you for your attention, and I hope we've provided you some value. Good day.